This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the family with
Andy Brandt Bernard,
co-host Catherine Brandt.
See, that's everyone.
Your friend Chris Eggert
just
posted a steak that looks like Minnesota.
Let me see.
Well, okay, then.
Of good, all things.
Good to know.
You're right. It looks like
you're
Minnesota.
You're grilling a steak and you see a shape.
Well, can I hold this up for the screen?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah,
up
but
to the camera.
But it doesn't give his address or anything on there, does it?
Well, he's on Twitter, so I'm sure he doesn't care if you follow him. Does that look like Minnesota to you, Andy?
Look at that steak.
It does look
reflection.
Like. I mean, it's kind of hard to see, but you can definitely see the silhouette of Minnesota in there.
Yeah, it does look like a steak that looks like Minnesota. He's absolutely right about that.
That's funny.
He nailed it. So anyway, we just came back, and there were about 80 billion different things going on.
80 billion? That's all?
With the snowpocalypse that ended up being like 4 inches of snow.
Oh, I thought we got 8.5.
Maybe. I didn't get 8.5. Our driveway, I shoveled it last night. Easy peasy.
Yeah, Chris Eggert said they got 8.5 inches of snow in the metro area, but out where you are, probably not. Maybe not.
Not so much, although some, like, minutes after the snow started falling, someone careened off the road, slammed into a pole, and cut power to the city.
Isn't it
It
amazing?
Took, like, no time.
It
has
amazing.
To be psychological because, like, the snow can't have even made the roads slick yet. It's not even possible.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, because you haven't had any blizzards yet this year, right?
No, and I don't think we're going to.
Right, and so we finally are getting some snow, so everybody's like, yeah, snow, oh,
yep.
My God. So it just turns into a big, big, big deal.
But, I mean, did St. Cloud, they were talking about St. Cloud getting, like, 2 feet of snow. Did that even happen?
They said that up north things are a lot worse.
Oh, is that
and
right?
By up north, I mean, yeah, St. Cloud-ish area.
Like St. Cloud-ish area. Yeah, so you got about the heat. Well, Chris Eggert said 8.5 inches of snow, but out where you are, you got about 4 inches, Andy?
I don't know how much we got, but that's, yeah, maybe six.
Not a lot.
Not enough to, yeah, really matter.
Do you think maybe the news like overplays it just so you'll tune in?
They do it every year. Every year
every
we
year.
Have a snowpocalypse. Yes. We're going to be 2 feet of snow, unable to leave our houses. Get your kerosene lamps ready, and it never, ever happens. It's happened. I think we've had, two major blizzards in my entire life, like where you couldn't leave the house.
And then one was on Halloween, so there you go.
Yeah, it's like every 20 years.
We finished that series, True Detective, where it's based in Alaska with Jodie Foster. And there's this, full-out blizzard. I mean, just terrible. And they're out there, you know, and they don't even have their parkas zipped up all the way. And they're out there picking through ice, and they're going to go on some sort of expedition to find some evidence. I'm like, you don't understand a blizzard. You can't go out in it.
No,
you
cannot.
You can't find your way back.
You can't see.
No.
You can't hear. Yeah.
And I don't care what kind of parka you have on. I don't think you can survive in sub-zero weather in a blizzard for very long.
No, it takes like 5 minutes or something to start getting frostbite if you have exposed skin in a blizzard.
Yeah, they should have consulted with somebody from Minneapolis before they decided to shoot these things with the open parkas in a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did have they did not have their parkas zipped up either. That's true. They did not.
it's
about 30 below.
I can't even imagine the kind of gear that you would have to survive in an Alaskan blizzard.
Yeah,
she is a terrific actor, though. God,
she's
good.
She really is.
Just
always liked her
since she was 12 years old. What, Taxi Driver? I think she was 12 when she did that
movie. Yeah, and she's like one of the few actresses that child actresses that kind of, I don't know if she turned out. And well, she's never been, you know, I don't think she's been like a drug addict or hurting people you know, doing anything psycho at all. So,
no, she did. How long does the several days of darkness go on in Alaska? Is it?
It depends on where you are, but there's
40 days.
There's one place up in the northern part that I think it's like 3 months.
It is 3 months.
Well, they're in Ennis. E-N-N-I-S. I don't know how far north is.
Alaska is not real. So there you go.
Oh, wow.
It is based on North Slope Borough, Alaska.
Okay.
And North Slope Borough, Alaska is in the very northernmost point. So, yeah. Yeah, they could get months of darkness, I believe.
Ugh. Isn't there some place on Earth that gets 6 months of darkness somewhere?
Maybe the Arctic Circle.
Let's see. North Slope, 2 months of darkness.
2 months.
Two months of darkness.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of darkness.
two months without any sunlight at all.
And then 2 months of total daylight.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then 2 months of no night.
So my question is, after watching that, why would you move to Ennis, Alaska, which isn't even real in the first place, but why the hell would you move there?
Well, North Slope Borough has a population of 11,000.
Really?
Yeah, this town up in inhospitable wilderness is actually not tiny.
Are they mostly...
I'm guessing oil.
Oil people and Inuits?
Maybe Inuits, maybe?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of that, too.
Maybe that's where their settlement was. I don't know.
Let's see, 2020 census. Yes, it's like 60% American Indian.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Is that text you're sending so important that you missed your turn? Is that text you're sending so important that you ran the red light? Is that text you're sending so important you didn't see the ball coming onto the road or the child that followed? Hi, I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. When you take your eyes off the road for even 4 seconds, your vehicle travels 100 yards. That's the entire length of a football field. If you absolutely have to text, you need to pull off the road somewhere safe and do it from there. Texting and driving is against the law and can cause serious injury or even death to you and others. Now that is important. We hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, please contact us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
With Mike Bryant on your side, seeking justice for the injured. Bradshaw and Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender. You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Anne is in studio.
Yes, she is.
There she is right there, big smile on her face, looking professorial in her glasses. Anne, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Magnificent, as a matter of fact. I just read your bio, and there's a part in there that made me very sad, but because we both had a son named Andrew.
Mm.
That's very, very difficult, Ann. Mm. I'm so sorry to hear about that. He's only 16 or 28, excuse me. He's 28 years old.
Yeah, thank you.
So God bless you, Ann. But just, it's so interesting. Maybe it's just me, Ann, but just because he had the same name as my Andrew, who's on the show with us right now, our Andrew, I should say, because Catherine's also on the show. But God bless you. It just should not happen to anybody. Ann Bauer has written three novels, A Wild Ride Up the Cupboard, with also the Forever Marriage. Now, Catherine and I have been married July 7th. It'll be 40 years. Is that a forever marriage?
I mean, that's pretty forever. Really? I have to say. My hat's off.
To her or me?
Well,
it's a long
time. And I will talk later.
Yeah, most people exactly. are in their 90s that are married 40 years.
That's probably true. Yeah, we've been together for 44 years, been married for, July 7th, it'll be 40. What do you mean, oh my God? I'm celebrating it, Ann, and she's over there complaining.
This makes me feel so old.
40 years is a long time to do anything.
These numbers make me feel really old.
Yep.
I don't like them.
I suppose that's probably true. And where did you grow up?
Mostly here in Minnesota.
I thought so, yeah.
Lived in Minnetonka, and I moved away when I was about 18. Actually moved out of my house when I was 15.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I was a different kid.
So it wasn't your choice to move out? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, it was my choice. Yeah. Yeah. I did not kind of fit the Minnetonka mystique of the 80s. I was not that kid.
That's pretty interesting, Ann, because I feel the same way. There are certain areas of Minnetonka are just really cool, and they go out boating and doing this, that, and the other thing. But there are parts of that lake, and it's a huge lake if people have never been there. I don't even know how many miles. It's like 500 miles of shoreline or something.
It's
like
a
that.
Lot. Mm-hmm. Big lake.
It is a huge, huge lake. But there are some pockets, you're right, Ann, where the people are like, not my kind of people. I gotta be
honest. It was so certain. You know, it was so, like, we have arrived, we are new money, we have our Farrah Fawcett haircuts. it was not my scene. I was small and weird and dark and, you know, kind of wordy.
Wordy.
So, yeah, I took off early.
But didn't you just describe a good writer? Aren't good writers all kind of shaped like that?
I mean, maybe. Every once in a while, I meet one who's well-adjusted, and I'm always like, really? Oh, my God, how do you do that? I'm like, really? You have a real life, and then you sit down and write, and how does this work? But, yeah, it was probably the breeding ground for a malcontent and a disruptor. That's how I describe myself these days. I disrupt. I disrupt every group I'm in. And it doesn't matter. I move to the group that all thinks they're disruptors, and then I disrupt them.
That's a problem, man.
It's a lifestyle, Tom. That's how I think of it.
I love it.
Yeah, that does work. No question about it. I got to read this again because this is very, very impressive. Ann Bauer has written three novels, A Wild Ride Up the Cupboards, The Forever Marriage, Forgiveness for You, as well as Damn Good Food, a memoir and cookbook co-authored with Hell's Kitchen founder, Mitch Homer. Yeah, that's wonderful. Mm. Her essays, travel stories, and reviews have appeared in Elle, Salon, Slate, Redbook, Dame, The Sun, Washington Post, Star Tribune, New York Times. So you're kind of famous, Ann. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I wouldn't say.
I just followed her on Twitter and thought she was very witty and was not afraid and not afraid to say what she felt. And I always admire that in anybody on social media. And then I found out she was also a writer. So,
see.
Oh, well, thank you, Catherine.
Which makes you more interesting, I guess.
Witty, unafraid is what lost me every single one of those writing venues that you listed.
Oh,
now this next line.
That does
not
surprise me.
Yeah, there you go. This next line I'm going to read tells me that you are exactly my kind of person. Because you started the conversation saying that you kind of grew up in Minnetonka, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm going to read the line, which I know that Ann and I would get along because we think the same way. So now remember, she grew up in Minnetonka, Maybe there were some problems, because the next line is, Ann lives part-time in St. Paul, Minnesota. Could you get any further away from Minnetonka?
Right? Yeah.
It does almost feel like St. Paul's a different country.
It does.
It really is. And people in Minnetonka never come here. It's a thing.
No.
No, they don't. They're not crossing that bridge for anything.
They don't acknowledge it. Nope. It's kind of grody. They're not into the whole river thing.
No.
Yeah.
You know, what's really weird about that, Ann, is I grew up in North Minneapolis, but I have my whole life since I was 16, 17 years old. I went over to St. Paul and I said, this town is completely different than Minneapolis. I love them both. I love Minneapolis. I love St. Paul for different reasons. We're very, very lucky. I love St. Paul. It's a great town.
We enjoy it. We kind of have our little pockets. We loved that we were near Wisconsin there for a while.
That does make sense. So how did the writing start? Okay, how old were you when you said, you know what, I want to be a writer? Because I think everybody at 16 wants to be a writer.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody does. But how did we find out when we're Ann Bauer, how did we find out we actually could write?
Well, I was about 16, actually.
There you go.
There you go. I moved to St. Paul, interestingly.
Really?
I escaped here, and now I've escaped here again. Moved to St. Paul. I could have moved. It was like Bangladesh, as far as anyone knew was concerned. Moved to St. Paul when I was 16, and I went to work as a cocktail waitress at, oh God, will you remember, Bigelow's.
Sure.
Ramada Inn on 94. I lied about my age. I got a job as a cocktail waitress, and that's what I did. And then I started writing about it.
Oh.
And it was just sort of weird and interesting enough. The poker games after the shifts were over, we went to the Blue Horse.
Do you remember? Yep.
Right?
Yep.
For a tableside Caesar salad. This is what I was doing. And you know, it was all just brand new to me. And so when I started writing about this and submitting those pieces, it had enough edge and enough specificity that I got into some programs. I got into a program at the university that took everyone to London, and we studied Shakespeare and at Stratford-on-Avon. And then I went to the University of Iowa and did their undergrad and then the graduate program in writing.
I think it's a magnificent story, because I was just thinking about this. The one thing that struck me is I grew up in North Minneapolis, but Minneapolis in general is a very Protestant city, whereas St. Paul is a very Catholic city. And that causes a lot of problems for some. I mean, not completely.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
I don't know about it
to be,
anymore.
I suppose. Yeah, probably not anymore. But when I was a kid, yeah, like a lot of Protestants in Minneapolis and a lot of Catholics in St. Paul. And I suppose that's why I loved it, because they were so different. Twin cities, but they were totally different twins.
True. I mean, my experience was so different. I had a Jewish parent and a Catholic parent.
Oh, there you go.
And so wherever we were odd.
Who was odder, mom or dad?
Oh, dad.
Definitely.
Yeah. Mom just fit right in. Dad was an East Coast Jew who moved to Minneapolis in 69, I think.
That must have been a big culture shock.
Big culture shock. He has said for years, he's still out in Minnetonka, and he has said for years, I can't believe I moved to a city that named its airport after Lindbergh.
Yeah.
That was his big kind of, but he loved my mother. And
So the fact that Charles Lindbergh actually hated Jews and supported Hitler. But other than that, Anne.
Other than that, the love of a good woman. See, we're getting back to that 44 years. The love of a good woman will surpass all such issues.
You know, so great about that. And once again, I grew up in North Minneapolis. It was Catholic, Black, and Jewish. So my whole life, that's who people were. They were either Jews, Catholics, or Black. And then I got out in other parts of the world and I went, what's this Protestant thing? What's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got nothing against Protestants, don't get me wrong, but I just had never been around them before. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, Ann, but I do have to bring this up. Many friends of mine and the family are Jews, and I cannot believe what's going on right now in the world. I just can't believe it, Ann.
I mean, I'm not so sure that I'm as surprised about what's going on in the Middle East as I am about the way that it has redivided people here.
Yep.
In a way that feels, frankly, a little false to me. Do you see why no one will hire me anymore?
Is that why? So you just don't fit in anywhere, Anne? Is
well,
that
you know, I mean, I understand having a strong feeling about, you know, whether or not Jews should have a homeland or Palestinians should be, you know, raised to the ground. These are big sort of foundational warfare issues. They're not our issues. They are not. And I have seen more people divide over this, become frenzied over this in a way that just feels out of sync with who they are.
I agree with that 100%. Once again, I am very, very lucky, and I promise I'll move on after this, but I had to bring it up, finding out your heritage and the rest of it. But I, my whole life, grew up around Jews. I still, to this day, many, many of my dear... Well, first of all, if I can be a friend of Gelfand, who's the most Jewish Jew I know, I could be anyone's fan.
Well, you know? She's so much more than just a Jewish man. So many ways.
Gail fan. I love that man. But an example of why I love the culture so much, and I do to this day, and I'm very open about the fact that I have many, many friends who are Jews and shut up around me with that. That's all I'm saying. That works for me. But at about 7 years old, I walked into a deli in North Minneapolis on Plymouth Avenue. Plitman's. I still know Michael Plitman. Mm. Really well. Was wonderful. I got a roast beef sandwich, and the guy behind the counter said, "What would you like to drink?" And I said, "Ann, nice
milk?
Catholic."
Did you say milk?
You are correct, ma'am. Well, I'm a Catholic. You know, I grew up Catholic. So the greatest thing, it's the first time I ever learned to speak any Yiddish words. He said, "Fe goyish anachis," which means Gentile pleasures.
You did that so
Did he give it to you?
No, he did not give it to me. He said, "No, we're not doing that in this. It's not going to happen."
You know, for a boy, nice your Yiddish is amazing.
Oh, I can speak some Yiddish. There's no question about that. I grew up, like I said, what I did when I grew up in a Jewish, Black, and Catholic neighborhood, I was Catholic, so I fit in there. I fit in and I didn't go out of my way to stroke anybody or kiss ass or any of that deal. I am fascinated by other cultures. I really am. The way people grew up fascinates me.
I think you had more of that culture in North Minneapolis.
Yep.
And I'm unclear on your age, but I think you were probably a decade before I was growing up.
Well, let me see now. Let's there might be a 7 at the beginning of my age, and there might I'm 72, and I talk about that all the time. Actually, I'm 72 mm-hmm. years old,
and so you're about 15 years older. And I think that also, by the time I moved to Minnetonka as a tween in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, that culture wasn't there. It wasn't like, you know, you step into a deli. It wasn't like you have people speaking Yiddish. So that was sort of lost.
As a matter of fact, I have yet to meet another Gentile that can say the word Schreira.
Oh, my goodness.
Most
I can't say that.
There you go. I'll bring up one thing, and then I want to talk a lot about your books, Ann, because first of all, you're a terrific guest. You're involved. You're a very interesting person. I really enjoy that. I love to interview people anyway. I always have. I love talking to people since I was a little boy, right? But I just, there's so many things on your descriptor page that I could refer to when, you know, talking about. So you taught at Brown University and McAllister College. Is that correct?
I did.
Well, tip of the cap. I mean, well, that had to be quite an honor, wasn't it?
Brown University was best professional experience in my life.
Yeah,
I've never seen students, and you know, obviously they get to choose from the most curious, the most able, the most diverse, but really it was extraordinary. And, you know, just a cool place to be. Providence, you know, River on Fire.
That whole, well, McAllister's not exactly a Pew Cole either. It's an awfully Pew nice call. Well, I'm just doing comparison.
All right.
You know.
McAllister was a little bit more of at a distance experience. I was never tenured. I was always a visiting professor, again, disruptor. I'm not the person you ask to be with you. Well, my husband asked me to be with him for life, but no one else. Everyone else is like, you know, he's got an unusual tolerance level. So McAllister really did not integrate instructors in, it was not as satisfying, I will say.
It's a very political college. I know that politics are very big at McAllister, and I'm not saying yes or no or positive or negative, but they really get into their politics over at McAllister. No doubt.
They do. They do.
No question about it. Okay, just one more thing, and I want to talk all about your books after this, but this is a fascinating line here. As I said, Anne lives part-time in St. Paul, Minnesota, and travels with her husband, John, a Spanish language computer security expert. What is that all about?
So,
I'd like to know.
Before he hitched himself to me, my husband was living in Spain, married to a Spanish woman, lived in Barcelona, spoke fluent Catalan and Spanish, and managed the, equivalent of a help desk in both of those languages. So now he works for, and I won't say which one, because we try to keep things somewhat separate since I explode the internet every once in a while. he works for a big high-tech company, and because he's so good at not only Spanish language, but Spanish culture. And, you know, he tends to have all of the accounts in Spain and Mexico and South America.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of traveling.
Pre-COVID, tons. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes total sense. Yeah, no question about it. So we're going all the way back now to, well, this is only 5 years till you were 16 years old, because you're 21 now. She just goes, you're 16 years old. Were you older, younger, when you realized, I think I want to write?
I was about, well, oh God, I remember holing up in my bedroom because I was a weird kid, but also reading the entire 12 book series of The Wizard of Oz. And thinking, this is like, it sounds so cliche, a lifeline. It was a portal into something different, where I was like, this is much cooler than where I've been. This is where I want to be. And so it really was that feeling of absolute love for sinking into someone else's world, and then wanting to do that. And I don't think I ever did it, by the way.
Oh, really?
Fiction-wise, I don't think I ever did it. Nope. I am a desperately frustrated fiction writer who's much better at nonfiction.
Isn't that always the way?
So do you always make the wrong choice in things? Is that part of your personality?
I always make the difficult choice.
Difficult, that's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. So what was it? Okay, when you've decided then I am going to sit down and I'm going to start writing, do you remember what you first started writing about?
Yeah, it was those experiences in St. Paul at Bigelow's restaurant. It was the women I knew who used to hang out at an Embers. There's a throwback for you.
Yes.
On Selby, I think. And so we'd go after work and we'd sit there all night. And I was with a group of people who were literally, when they weren't waitressing, you know, turning tricks to make some money. They were selling drugs. They were, it was a pretty rough, but you know, they were very nice to me. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an essay about sitting at Embers all night with these people. And that was what caught the attention of not only my teachers, but I have to give him credit for this, my father, who really, I think, raising me, the fact that it didn't kill him was amazing, because everything about him wanted to control my every move.
Yeah.
Everything about me was like, oh, no, you won't. But he saw that piece and he said, damn it. I think you're a writer.
Really?
Well, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. He's a smart man and a realist. And he said, yeah, fine.
But that's wonderful to have that. I mean, it doesn't sound like great support, but it is.
Oh, it is. Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
And did you know it at the time, though? Did you know it was great support? Or you kind of go, that's kind of half-assed?
Yeah, no. Even as much as we have clashed, and we've been clashing now for 58 years, we've been clashing. No, I knew. I knew that he stuck with me. As much as he would, you know, poke and needle and try to trap me in a box, he stuck with me.
Well, that's good. So did you get along with your father? I mean,
not at all.
You didn't get along at all.
Well, no, we had a very tough relationship. He is a man who likes everything under his control, and I am a woman who refuses to be under anyone's control.
I understand that, and completely. Just by talking to you, you're a lot like this woman I'm married to tell you the truth.
And a lot like the man you're talking to.
Oh, well, I haven't heard Andy say a word yet. You're talking about it. Now, what's interesting about that, Anne, and that's the reason I asked you the question, because you can kind of tell if you're the same kind of person that's there, because I never, ever got along with my father.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, I guess because he thought I was doing well and the rest of it. He died at 60 years old. He left when I was seven. He was taken away in a straitjacket when I was 7 years old. He's put in a mental institution.
Oh.
And so he kind of came and went for a couple of years. Then I didn't see him for decades. But I got a call from the hospital up in, what was the name of that hospital again?
Oh.
Up there. And it doesn't really matter. But I get a call.
Mercy,
your father.
Mercy, maybe?
Yeah, it was Mercy. Yeah, Mercy Hospital. It was, absolutely. I get a call from the hospital and they say, Tom, your father is in the hospital. He's not going to live much longer, and he specifically wants to talk to you. And I said, no, he does not. He and I never got along. He never talked to me. I never spent any time with him. He goes, no, specifically, he wants to see you. And I'm like, okay. And I remember talking to Catherine about this, because I had only known you for a year or two at that time, right?
Yeah.
Very short period. So I drove up to Mercy Hospital, because we lived in Minnetonka at the time, probably right next door to you, Ann. But I drove up to the hospital. I'm thinking the whole way, what is it that he wants? Well, I mean, we never got along. We never spent any time together. He never cared for me. So I get up there, and I was about by 4 or 5 inches, the tallest, biggest kid in my family. I need to throw that in because it's important here.
Mm-hmm.
So I get there, and he weighs about 85 pounds. He was a little guy anyway, but he had nothing on, whatever. So he points to this chalkboard, and I bring him the chalkboard over, and he lays face down in his chest for a while. And he was writing on it for about a half an hour. And it was literally a half an hour. And then again, it collapsed down on his chest, and he called me over to look at it, because he had so many tubes going down his throat, he couldn't talk. So I grabbed the chalkboard, and I go, what, is this going to change my life forever? Is he going to say, I'm sorry? Is he going to say, Tom, I love you? Is he going to say something he's never told me before? I turned it around, Anne, and it said, get me out of here.
Well, you're like a character who stays in form, right?
Exactly. When you go to a restaurant, you expect the chef to be an expert. You expect your auto mechanic to be an expert when it comes to fixing your car. You judge them both by the results of their work. Josh Arnold is an expert in investments and planning your financial future. Josh Arnold is my expert, and he should be yours, too. I talk to Josh every week, and he understands the market and the economy, and he knows how to plan for your retirement. Don't put it off another day. The man with your plan is Josh Arnold. Call Josh now for a no-obligation 48-minute evaluation. You've got nothing to lose, and you'll have an expert planning and managing your financial future. Call Josh at 952-925-5608. That's 952-925-5608. Investment services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC Security Investment Advisor. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk. All comments and opinions are Josh Arnold's and do not constitute investment advice. Tom Bernard is a paid endorser. So you should use that in one of your books. Get me out of here.
I will write the history of Tom Bernard, and that will be in there.
That will be in there. So he dies, even though he was Protestant. My mother was Catholic. They weren't together still. They hadn't been together in 35 years by that time, or maybe longer than that. But my mother called a Catholic priest to come and bless him on his deathbed, which I thought was very nice of her because, you know, it was her deal. Mm-hmm. And so he died, and then I'm outside, and I'm just kind of looking out the window. And the priest came out, and you got a picture in your mind, Ann, a priest running away down a hospital hallway because he comes over and he touches my shoulder and he said, Thomas, I'm very sorry your father died. And I said, yeah, he probably had it coming. He literally like ran away from me.
Yeah. He's going to go get a crucifix and some holy water.
You're gonna go get some stuff, but Ann. So I mean, not getting along with your father. I'm sorry I got so carried away there, but not very often do I talk to someone who did not get along with their father, which is fascinating in your situation.
And I don't still, but we stick it out.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I wrote about recently was family estrangement, which, you know, I get. It's everywhere. It's in my own family. But I will say that as someone who probably was raised by the wrong parents, you know, we did not mesh.
Yeah.
I love them and they love me and we work it out. And, you know, they are very elderly and they are doing what they're doing out there in Minnetonka in their house with staircases that I think, oh, my God, really? But I think there is value in, you know, seeing it through, I guess. Or maybe it's just the life I ended up in. I don't know.
It's a positive. Do you think that the great writers out there, do you think most of them were in the exact same situation? Not all of them, but most of the good ones, do you think, were in that exact same family situation?
I guess it depends on who we're talking about. You know, I have a huge spot in my heart for the great writers of the 60s, 70s, 80s, who I think are referred to as the old dead white guys. You know, I love the John Updike.
Sure.
The Wallace Stegner. And those guys, yeah. I mean, they were hard drinkers and they were, you know, cheating on various wives, and they were messes of human beings. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of baked into the writing deal. These days, writers are more promoters.
Yeah,
the writers,
that's a good
you
point.
Know.
Yep.
And those people tend to have much more typical family lives and relationships, I think. You don't hear a lot. You hear oh so much about, you know, the elite parties and the long-term marriages and the kids who are going off to Ivy League schools among the writers.
Yeah. No, that is very, very true. I've been very, very lucky because, you know, doing the same morning show for 37 years, I got to know a lot of people. And Gore Vidal put out a book called Palimpsest many, many years ago, right? And I never met him in person, but Gore used to call me or I would call him and we would talk on the phone when I'm driving a car or whatever. But I used to talk to Gore Vidal all the time for the exact same reasons you're talking about, because I had never talked to anybody that had the same experiences that he did. And he would not call me Tom. He always called me Mr. Barnard.
Mm.
He always did.
I mean, what a great thing to be on the phone with Gore Vidal.
Oh, God, and it was unbelievable. I learned so much about him. He was a brilliant man, but maybe not the happiest person I've ever talked to.
Yeah, and that used to be part of your deal. Yep. Oh, unhappy life, but then. And I feel like that's shifted somewhat. And if I sound bitter, maybe I, you know, it's like being that wretched, I put the blood on the page person really isn't what's valued right now. Being really great at working the publishing game and being on Twitter, and not on Twitter the way I am, where you offend as many people as you attract, but you know.
You know, it'll happen. I am fascinated talking to authors. I'm very lucky to have known a number of you. It's a different life. Do people who are good writers, really good writers, know that they're not a lot like other people?
I think so.
Yeah.
You know, I've known a couple who I think, oh, you're a really great writer. I met Marilyn Robinson at Iowa.
Oh.
And I think she's extraordinary as a writer. As a human being, she is really not to my taste.
I understand. Yep. I do understand that. But isn't it, what a great thing. Is that what you were kind of looking at when you decided anyway? Because once again, we kind of locked in on that 16-year-old situation. Did you become, and did the job become everything you thought it would be?
Well, I took a massive detour because I went to college. First, I got into that program and went to England. And then I went to the University of Iowa. And I kind of slipped into a more typical mode for, you know, I had my first drink and I had my first boyfriend. I'd never done these things, even while working at that Ramada Inn. I had been this kid who, you know, watched, but didn't indulge in anything. Mm-hmm. So I became a typical college student for about 2 years. And then I graduated and my very controlling dad said, now you must you must go to work and get a great job for what we've spent on your education. And I couldn't, it was the recession of, 1986.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. And he was just pounding on me day and night. Like, you know, I was able to walk out and get a good, what is wrong? And so, of course, I did what stupid young, I'm going to say women here, if that's okay with you, have done for hundreds of years. I ran away and I got married.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you know you were going to do that or did it just happen?
It just kind of happened.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yep. I went back to my college town, to Iowa City, to meet some friends because I needed to get out from under the, you know, stifling whatever, and met this guy and thought, oh, he understands me and he's sensitive and he's wonderful, and completely missed the fact that he was a raging alcoholic.
I shouldn't be laughing at that, but completely missing the fact, but you know,
I was 20 years old and I thought, oh, you know, he's just Johnny Nolan. Does anyone get that? You know, he's sensitive and he just needs the love of a good woman. So there I was. And then I married him right on the spot practically and had 3 children quickly.
And what else? Are we still together?
Oh, we stayed together for 12 years.
For 12 years you did?
We did.
Okay, but now it's a different story.
But the whole time I was like, oh, you know, the ups and downs and the bankruptcies and the...
Oh, God.
and the, you know, disappearances and the whole, I was living that sort of life where you're constantly covering up for the fact that this person is doing erratic things, and you can't explain it. You can't explain to your neighbors, oh, my husband just dipped out for 2 weeks. I have no idea where he is. That's why our walks aren't shoveled. I'm inside with the kids. It was 12 years of just constant shifting ground.
So literally the whole 12 years he would do this kind of thing?
Yep.
God, how did you put up with it?
Well, see, we'd have the big tearful, like,
yeah,
oh no, I'm going to do better. And then it would seem like he was doing great. He'd have a job and he'd get up and go to work, and I'd think, oh, we got this locked. It's okay. And then I finally learned that that's when I had to pay attention, when everything seemed good. That's when he was like, oh, I'm safe now. And he'd be off spending money on all things you can't imagine, or, you know, driving around in his truck and drinking all day instead of going to work. And then I'd find out, and by the time I found out, we'd owe tens of thousands of dollars, which at that time was, yeah. So that was my life until I was about 34.
Do you think that, because looking at great writers and the ones that I've talked about throughout my entire career, do you think observing is a great gift and a great horror all at the same time? To be such a great observer, to notice everything makes you a great writer, but does it make you a happy person?
Oh, that was so beautifully said. I hope someone sends me a clip of you saying that, because you have captured exactly what it is. Yeah. I observe everything, and I also kind of see ahead.
Yep.
And I don't want to get too, you know, ahead of ourselves here, but I think the reason that Catherine noticed me is because when COVID first started, I saw some things ahead and I said them at a time when it was absolutely forbidden to do so.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of the thing all along. But yes, when I was married to my first husband, I could see it happening. I could see this cataclysm sort of unfolding, and I could see it ahead. But at that point, I thought, well, I have these three children, one of whom had some significant developmental differences, and I just couldn't figure out how to organize my life any other way.
Isn't it great you were able to, though? I mean, thinking about where you were and where you are now, you did the right thing.
I eventually found a path. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you always wonder, you know, well, I took this path, so what if I'd stayed with the man? I don't know. But yeah, I eventually got to the point where I said, okay, I have to be responsible here. And I tried to be responsible within the marriage. I tried to be the earner and the person who was running things. And even that didn't work, because he could tear apart as fast as I could build up.
Yeah.
And so finally we divorced, and I was on my own for 6 years. And I actually, you know, I did a pretty good job. I think, you know, my children would have to weigh in on how it worked. I worked a lot. They were alone too much. But I kept a house and food and, you know, clothes and field trip money, and managed to get them all through school.
That's wonderful. See, now that is a great, I wish more people could tell that story, that you actually stepped up and did the job, where most people would go, well, I can't do this all by myself, and would just give up.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to go back and say, my parents stepped up as well. and they were
wonderful.
They were a support to me, even though they completely disapproved of every single thing about my life.
I know about that. Yeah,
they were helpful and supportive.
See how great that is. To have support like that has got to be, that's pretty rare, I bet.
I think it is. And I think it's often the difference between who makes it and who doesn't.
No question. God, your life story is terrific. We're going to have to interview you about your book sometime, because just talking to you about your life story is fascinating.
Oh, well, thank you, sweetheart. I am, those books, I published my last book 9 years ago.
That was 9 years ago.
It was 9 years ago. And I will tell you this, and I don't think I've ever said this out loud, like in a public venue, that book never should have been published.
That's, you're right. You should probably not say that again.
I should probably not say that.
maybe not.
Yeah. My other two books were, my other two novels were really good. They were of very high quality. That.
All right. So the internet is dead. We have lost connection to Tom, Catherine, and Anne. But it's about time to end the show anyway. So I'll just end it right here. And I guess we'll see you tomorrow.